Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics and theology. Friday, we talk about whatever I like to talk about. And it can be a wide variety of things on Free for All Friday. And oftentimes we talk about things that don't directly relate to the Catholic faith because there's so many things one could talk about on a free-for-all show like Free-for-All Friday. But every now and then, there's something really interesting related to Catholicism that I would like to talk about on Friday as well, because it's free-for-all, which means I'm free to talk about whatever I'd like to talk about. So there was a podcast that I started listening to recently, and it's really fascinating and really well done, about a figure that I was familiar with, but I only knew like the basic definition and sketch of this individual. So the podcast is put out, I think, by a group called Tablet, and it is called Radioactive. So it's like a play on, it's a play on words, but it's radioactive, but it's not about radioactivity. It's not about Chernobyl. It's not about physics. It is about probably the most famous, or I guess a better word to use would be infamous, radio personalities in American history. So when you think about radio, talk radio, who would be perhaps the most infamous and famous, but infamous because of the bad things that he did, that he talked about? And that would be an individual named Father Charles Coughlin. So, and I was familiar with Father Coughlin, though for a long time I thought his last name was pronounced Coughlin, because it's spelled C-O-U-G-H-L-I-N, but it's actually pronounced Coughlin, Father Charles Edward Coughlin, or Father Coughlin. And he was one of the dominant individuals. Really, he's the forefather of conservative talk radio, or talk radio. There was a time during the Great Depression, like in 1932 or 1934, where one-third of the country. Radio, remember, radio was just a new invention. I think it had been around for maybe, I don't know, a decade or so, but it hadn't been around, or at least radio stations had only been around for that long. You'd had radio for a while, but it was still a fairly new technology that people were still trying to understand and use to promote themselves. But there was a time in the Great Depression, 1932 or 1934, the early 30s, where one-third of the country, a third of radio audiences across the country, were tuning in to the sermons of a Catholic priest. And that's astounding if you think about it, because America is a very Protestant country. It was founded, a lot of the people who were the founders, those who came here to start the colonies, were Protestants of various stripes. Catholics were tolerated in certain areas of the country, but the presence of Catholics in America, that didn't really grow until the latter part of the 18th and 19th century, when you had more Catholic immigrants coming from predominantly Catholic countries in Europe. But in the institutions of power, even across the religious landscape, it was primarily Protestant. So it was fascinating that a third of the country was tuning in to Father Coughlin, though the reason that they were really tuning into him was not strictly for religious purposes. Father Coughlin, while he may have started and wanted to speak about religion, he became more well-known talking about politics, and his influence increased and spread as he spread very reactionary politics. He began to promote fascist governments in Europe. He denounced communism. He was very anti-communist, but he was also, he promoted these fascist governments. He was also anti-Semitic. He would promote Jewish conspiracy theories, and that eventually led to his censure both by ecclesial authorities, namely his bishop, and even the president of the United States, because the president of the United States, FDR, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, so FDR, took an issue with Coughlin, because Coughlin, when he would be out on his radio show reaching a third of the country, he was affecting votes in the presidential election. And this was all very new, because radio was such a new phenomena that people were not, it wasn't really heavily regulated by the government as at all. And some of the regulations that were passed and still exist today were the result of the influence of Father Charles Coughlin. So, as I said, I knew the overarching broad brushstrokes of Father Coughlin's life. I knew he was an infamous radio priest who trafficked in conspiracy theories, reactionary politics, and anti-Semitism. So I knew that, but I didn't know a lot of the other things. So I'm not going to be exhaustive in today's episode. I'm just going to give you kind of a little bit more of the story. And I would definitely recommend check out the podcast Radioactive. It's an 8-part series. And what's really cool about listening to it, I'll try to grab a clip from it to share with you to see what Father Coughlin sounded like on the radio. But they have a lot of interviews with historians. It's a scripted podcast. It's like an NPR production. So it's scripted. They have interviews. The host is very well researched. I don't know if everything he's saying is 100% accurate. I'm not a Father Coughlin expert or anything like that. Like I said, I just know the broad brushstrokes. But it all pretty much seems to be on the up and up. And it provides a really fascinating look with the interviews, the old radio broadcasts. It's very artfully done. The episodes are short. They range from like 15 to 25 minutes. So an 8-part series, I don't know, it's probably about an hour and a half in length covering his life. So I'll give you a little bit more on him. Then definitely check out the series to get more for that. So Father Coughlin, commonly known as Charles Edward Coughlin, known as Father Coughlin, or back then he was just known as the Radio Priest. So he was born in Canada, October 25th in 1891. And his mother always regretted that she never became a nun. So she instilled a very, they were, I think, you know, they're a typical Irish Catholic family born, you know, living in Canada. And she instilled a strong sense of religious faith in him at a very young age. So later on, he becomes a priest and he joins an order, the Basilians. Then there's kind of a change in the order, including the traditional religious vows that were required, chastity, poverty, and obedience. And Father Coughlin did not want to take those vows. So he left that order and he became a priest and he was incardinated in 1923 in the Archdiocese of Detroit. Okay, so he was actually at a very small parish on the other side of the Detroit River. And of course, this is a time where Henry Ford had invented the automobile, was beginning production there, and Detroit was part of the booming automobile industry. It had not become the rundown, you know, place that it unfortunately is now in many places, but it was a thriving area. And he was transferred to several different parishes, but in 1926, he was assigned to the Shrine of the Little Flower, where he remained, and that was in a fairly Protestant suburban community in Royal Oak, Michigan. Although, by the way, the podcast goes into a lot of detail about his early life, saying like when he went to college, he didn't get really good grades, not because he wasn't smart. He was very intelligent. He just preferred to do things that he wanted to rather than what his teachers wanted. There was a class where they were supposed to give a 20-minute impromptu presentation. And Father Coughlin, back then, of course, he was just Charles Coughlin. He ended up giving like an hour and 20-minute long presentation to his class. So he's always very theatrical, enjoy being the center of attention. And that's something that really grew for him as the pastor at the Shrine of the Little Flower. So, and this was back shortly after St. Therese of Lisieux was actually canonized, would be like the youngest saint and then would be dedicated at this shrine. So he was running the church. The problem was he was having a lot of financial difficulties. He was trying to figure out what to do, but he was very, what's the word I'm looking for here? He had a lot of connections. He was a connector. He was good at connecting with people, making deals, and he knew people at the very least that cared about celebrities. Even if they didn't care about the church, they cared about celebrities. So he got Babe Ruth. He got Babe Ruth, a famous baseball player at the time, obviously, to come in to do a fundraiser through his connections for the parish. But he noticed that unfortunately people came for the fundraiser with Babe Ruth, but they didn't keep coming back. So he was trying to figure out a way, well, how can I get people interested in the church and kind of get them hooked as a result? And he was then introduced to radio. So in 1926, he started to broadcast his sermons on a weekly radio station in Michigan. That would be WJR Radio. And how he really broke the mold and got people to pay attention to him was he talked about the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, who you may not know this, but the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK, you know, anti-Semitic, anti-black, racist organization. In the 1910s and 20s, actually, in the 30s, the KKK was very anti-Catholic. They would go around burning crosses on Catholic churches. They said that Catholics were going to start a revolution in the country. So they were a very one of their primary things that they went after in their early days were Catholics. And it was purported that the KKK had burnt a cross on the grounds of the Shrine of the Little Flower. Though the podcast, the Radioactive podcast, says there actually isn't a lot of evidence that this happened. So there's evidence that actually that Father Coughlin made up the story, or he read about a cross burning and then, it would be a lie then to say that it happened at his church instead of somewhere else. But then in his radio sermons, he exaggerates more and talks about multiple cross burnings, and people are very sympathetic to this, and the Irish Catholics in the community are up in arms. And then people keep tuning in and they enjoy his sermons. And what really catapulted Father Coughlin, people listen to his sermons, was that he had a voice for radio. He had a baritone voice. He would speak in almost a melodic way. He's the father of talk radio, but I'd also say he's the father of televangelism, that his speaking style reminds me of Protestant televangelists who will talk like this in up and down voices. You're not just a strict monotone, right? What's the worst homily you've ever heard, right? Just monotone. Start and go. He swells in what he speaks. He doesn't have a Southern accent, but he has that baritone voice, and it's melodic. It's almost like music when you hear it. And so it's kind of hypnotizing as a result of that. So I'm going to try to find a clip here. Let's see if I can find a clip and play that for you so you can get an idea from the podcast of what Father Coughlin sounded like when he would give these sermons.
The writer Wallace Stegner had an idea about why everyone wanted to listen to the priest. His voice.
A beautiful baritone. His range was spectacular. He always began in a low pitch, speaking slowly, gradually increasing in tempo and vehemence, then soaring into high and passionate tones.
If not, my friends, the moment has arrived when we too meet Christ face to face. He speaks to all of us to bring God back into our country. He speaks to all of us to bring back that faith into our hearts.
And by no means do I intend to retreat from this fight of driving the money changers from the temple. They may hold power over politicians, but they hold no power over the pulpit of a Catholic church that dares preach for the alleviation of misery, that dares inveigh against usury, and that dares clamors for an honest living annual wage, free from the sins of the past and free from the excesses of the future. God be with you. God be with all of us in this fight that shall last until death comes if necessary.
So like I said, melodic, hypnotizing, and he got a lot of people to tune in. And the people, the radio station, his show was eventually picked up by CBS in 1930 for national broadcast, syndicated all over the country. And the previous year, WJR was acquired by Goodwill Stations in 1929. The owner of the station told Coughlin, you should talk more about politics and not just religion. And that's what people really wanted to hear, especially in 1930, 1931. Everybody wanted to hear about politics because of the Great Depression. They all wanted to hear because of the Great Depression, and Father Coughlin took advantage, like any good demagogue would, to find a bad guy. And his bad guys were international bankers, crooked politicians, and he would peddle all these conspiracy theories about Herbert Hoover directly causing the Great Depression through investment schemes, using taxpayer dollars, and he had all these, he would promote these things, and if it starts with international bankers, that quickly turns into the old tired trope of that the Jews are involved in all of this, and they're the ones pulling the strings in the one world government and all these different things. But it spread, and people, they couldn't get enough of it because he was also extremely anti-communist, as the church is. So when he's talking about anti-communism, that's great. But his idea to oppose communism, he was also really opposed to capitalism. He thought, no, we don't want to have capitalism, and free markets are not the answer either. Because here's what he says, because he thinks free markets can lead to depressions as well. There needs to be tighter control. Hence, he was a favor he enjoyed, or he had a predilection towards, fascist governments, Mussolini, Hitler. So here's what he writes about free markets. He says, "We maintain the principle that there can be no lasting prosperity if free competition exists in industry. Therefore, it is the business of government not only to legislate for a minimum annual wage and maximum working schedule to be observed by industry, but also so to curtail individualism, that if necessary, factories shall be licensed and their output shall be limited." So he started to talk about this more, and he actually published a magazine called Social Justice in March of 1936. So he was essentially a social justice warrior. So he had a weird mixture of beliefs, right? He was very anti-communist. He was anti-capitalist. So he had to get between the two. Well, he thought, well, you need a strong government that nationalizes things, that kind of like you take socialism, but you wed it to nationalism so you don't get all that communist ridiculousness. National socialist workers would be great, aka that's the Nazis, National Socialist Workers Party. Now, I think Coughlin did distance himself from the Nazi party, and he would deny that he was anti-Semitic. But at the same time, in 1938, his magazine, Social Justice, was publishing installments of a fraudulent forgery called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Okay, so The Protocols of the Elders of Zion is an old conspiracy text that was first published in Russia in 1903, and I believe it claims to be like minutes or reports of a Jewish plan for a one world government. It's like, this is the secret document from the Jews and how they're going to take over. In fact, the full title is The Protocols of the Meetings of the Learned Elders of Zion. So it's a fabrication, though. It was created in 1903, and it's been used ever since then to promote anti-Semitism. And Coughlin was a part of that. In 1938, this was 2 weeks after Kristallnacht, or the Night of Broken Glass, when in Germany, Jewish businesses were attacked and destroyed. What Coughlin said in his podcast, he said, "Jewish persecution only followed after Christians first were persecuted." And so soon he's starting to move across the line. He's gone too far. But it took his bishop, Michael Gallagher of Detroit, a long time to censure him. And so others had issued formal condemnations. So that came into play. But also, even before that, you had the government was stepping in saying they were concerned about what Coughlin was doing. He's promoting pro-fascist tendencies. He could be undermining elections with his reach. So they couldn't go after Coughlin as a private individual because of the First Amendment. He could say all these things. But they treated it as saying, well, what he says on air, on radio, they said, look, radio is a limited national resource. There's only so many radio airwaves, so government is allowed to regulate them and to regulate their content. And so he was able to do that because the government started to require permits for broadcasting and wouldn't give any to Coughlin. So eventually, though, he was forced off the air, I think, by the government and by his bishop. I think this was in 1942. But I'm telling you, he was so popular, though. He was so popular. The post office, the postal service had to build a post office in his neighborhood solely to handle his fan mail. There was a time at his height of his popularity, he was getting 80,000 pieces of mail a week, that he had 100 clerks to handle the fan mail. he was receiving from people. Because he was getting so much fan mail, because like certain other people who shall remain nameless, he soon realized that you can get people really interested if you talk less about religion and more about politics, but you put a religious veneer upon it. And you are constantly, you have the religious veneer and you talk about tradition, you talk about religious themes, but you are heavily mired in politics and you promote conspiracy theories on the way. And unfortunately, many hurtful and harmful anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. And then after his public career ended in 1942, he continued to be the pastor at the Little Shrine until 1966. And then he died in 1979, actually, at the age of 88. So that's just a brief overview. I would definitely recommend the podcast series Radioactive if you want to learn more about Father Coughlin. I don't really listen to podcasts very much, by the way. I prefer to just kind of read stuff. But I really liked having this on the background when I was working on things. I thought it was done very well quality. So hope this was an interesting tidbit for you in Catholic history and radio history and American history. Check out Radioactive if you want to go deeper in the subject. And yeah, I just hope that you all have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.